Hi everyone, welcome to EHS, this week's podcast for the week ending September 19th. I'm Nicola DeCuna.
And I'm Allison Greinke.
We're bringing you the latest stories in environmental health and safety. So I'm going to start off with a story about National Farm Safety and Health Week. So National Farm Safety and Health Week is coming up starting tomorrow, September 20th to September 27th. And the Energy Education Council's Safe Electricity Program is reminding farmers and other agricultural workers to practice safety when working near overhead power lines. So that means equipment should be checked daily to make sure it will steer clear of power lines. So if a power line is touched, farmers should stay on the farm equipment and call the local utility provider. If the equipment is on fire, farmers should jump off it with their feet together and avoid touching the ground and equipment at the same time. Essentially, bunny hop away by keeping feet together.
It's nice to see these safety initiatives address niche sectors such as farm safety. Do you have any other safety suggestions for farmers working near power lines?
Yes, so Safe Electricity offers some additional guidance to farmers with the following tips. Use a spotter when operating large machinery near power lines. Be careful when raising augers or the bed of grain trucks around power lines. Keep equipment at least 10 feet from power lines. Check the height of farm equipment for clearance. Put extensions on the lowest setting when moving loads. Never move a power line for clearance. And if a power line is low or sagging, notify the utility provider. So for more information on this initiative, you can check out our resources section below. So Allison, I think you have an update on OSHA.
Yeah, so OSHA's annual list of the top 10 most frequently cited standards was released this week, and there are no big surprises for those who are aware of OSHA's previous top 10 lists. So this year's list, in fact, includes the exact same 10 standards that were on the list last year, with some minor shifts across the list. However, the top three are, in fact, exactly the same as they were in fiscal 2013. Fall protection led the way again with 6,143 violations in OSHA's fiscal 2014 year. Hazard communication also stayed put at second place with 5,161 violations, while scaffolding had 4,029 in third place.
Fall protection has been the most frequently cited standard for a few years in a row now, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. Fall protection has been at the top of this list since 2011, actually, when it took over the scaffolding standard. Prior to 2011, the scaffolding standard had been the most cited for 6 years in a row during the period of 2004 to 2010. The fall protection standard outlines both when fall protection is required and what kinds of systems are appropriate given the situation. The goal of the standard is to protect employees on walking or working surfaces with an unprotected side or edge that is higher than 6 feet.
Construction standards seem to be well represented in OSHA's top 10 list.
Yeah, you're right. Fall protection and scaffolding are both construction standards, as is the ladder standard, which this year is in 8th place in the top 10. It's important to point this out because OSHA does invest a lot of time and energy into inspecting construction sites, and so their top citation numbers do reflect this. But of course, different industries face different risks and should have different priorities when it comes to ensuring their workers' safety and preparing for an OSHA inspection. If you want to find out more information about which standards your company needs to be paying extra attention to, you can visit the United States Department of Labor website to generate a report on the most frequently cited federal or state OSHA standards based on your NAICS code and the number of employees at your company. So you can find a link to that site in the resources section of this podcast, where you'll also find a link to our recent blog post that outlines the full top 10 list from OSHA's 2014 fiscal year. Nicola, I think you have another update from OSHA.
Yes, so last week, OSHA revealed a revised final rule requiring employers to notify OSHA when an employee is killed on the job within 8 hours or suffers a work-related hospitalization, amputation, or loss of an eye within 24 hours.
How does this revised rule differ from the current rule?
Well, under the current rule, if a worker is killed on the job or three or more workers are hospitalized, the employer must notify OSHA. Reporting single hospitalizations, amputations, or loss of an eye was not previously required. So the revised rule, which also updates the list of employers partially exempt from OSHA's record-keeping requirements, will go into effect on January 1, 2015, for workplaces under federal OSHA jurisdiction. State plan states will set the implementation dates for their employers, but OSHA Administrator David Michaels encouraged those states to also implement the new provisions on January 1st. Michaels said that the revision to OSHA's reporting requirements is long overdue, and he called the revised rule an example of the application of behavioral economics to worker safety. So when an employer notifies OSHA of a severe injury among its workers, they'll ask what caused the injury and what the employer intends to do to address the hazard and prevent future injuries. That employer will then be on notice that OSHA knows about the severe injury and will have made the commitment to address the hazards. And OSHA believes that this will lead the employer to take the necessary steps to better protect the lives and limbs of their employees.
What are some of the benefits of the revised rule?
Well, a benefit of the revised rule is that the additional injury data from employers will help OSHA better distribute agency resources and assess how well the standards are working. So all employers covered by the Occupational Safety and Health Act, so even those who are exempt from maintaining injury and illness records, are required to comply with OSHA's new severe injury and illness reporting requirements. So to help employers fulfill these requirements, OSHA is developing a web portal for employers to report incidents electronically, in addition to the phone reporting options. OSHA has also updated the list of industries that, due to low occupational injury and illness rates, are exempt from the requirement to routinely keep injury and illness records. The previous list of exempt industries was based on the old standard industrial classification system, and the new rule uses the North American industrial classification system to classify establishments by their industries. The new list is based on updated injury and illness data that was provided from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So the new rule maintains the exemption for any employer with 10 or fewer employees, regardless of their industry classification, from the requirement to routinely keep records of worker injuries and illnesses. So for more on OSHA's revised rule, check out our resources section. Sticking to the topic of safety, according to a study from the National Association of Manufacturers, occupational safety and health regulations cost employers about $71 billion each year. For individual employers, occupational safety and health and homeland security regulations in 2012 amounted to an average of $761 per employee. This represents nearly 8% of the average employer's total federal regulatory cost per employee, which is $9,991. For the manufacturing sector, safety and homeland security regulations had a bigger impact, costing the average manufacturer $831 per employee in 2012. This is slightly more than 4% of manufacturers' burden of all federal regulations per employee, which is $19,564. The bulk of all employers' regulatory costs stem from economic regulations, while environmental regulations were the most costly for the manufacturing sector. The study, which wasn't peer-reviewed, looked only at the cost of federal regulations, not potential benefits. So during a September 10th press conference, the National Association of Manufacturers' chief economist recommended that other studies be conducted on regulatory benefits. He said regulations are critical to protect safety, but he stressed the need to eliminate unnecessary burdens on employers. Complying with federal regulations resulted in lost economic growth, according to National Association of Manufacturers' president. But he also added that Washington needs to take steps to streamline regulations as well. So you can find the link to the complete study in our resources section. Now, Allison, I think you're closing off with a story about Healthy Workplace Month.
Yeah, so we're more than halfway through September now, and there are quite a few organizations that are busy gearing up for October, which is Canada's Healthy Workplace Month. The month is presented by Great West Life in collaboration with the Canadian Centre for Occupational Health and Safety, and each week has a different theme. So Canadian companies are being encouraged to organize their own initiatives and submit those initiatives to be showcased on the official website. You can find a link to the website in the resources section of this podcast and take a look at the entries already submitted to get some ideas for your own company workplace initiatives. For example, one organization will be giving out bingo cards to their staff members each week, with each bingo square representing a healthy habit that the employee could try to adopt that week, from sanitizing their work area or going on walks during break time to getting 8 hours of sleep at least 3 times that week. Another campaign taking part in October is the Walk for Wellness Challenge, which is the result of a collaboration between New Day Wellness in Sudbury, Ontario, and the Heart and Stroke Foundation. So corporate teams will be wearing pedometers for the month to track their steps with the goal of encouraging people to be as active as possible.
That sounds similar to an initiative our company is already doing.
Yeah, it does. Intellex handed out pedometers to its employees back in May, and we've set a company-wide goal to try and walk the equivalent of the distance to the moon and back by May 2015. So, you know, it's a fun initiative that I think is boosting workplace wellness, and it's also had a positive team building impact. Although October is recognized as Healthy Workplace Month in Canada, there's nothing stopping our U.S. neighbors or any other company anywhere else in the world from taking advantage of the great ideas out there and encouraging their workforce to adopt healthy habits as well. And if you are in Canada, you've got plenty of time to brainstorm, get involved, and register your own initiative. Right now, the number of participating organizations is at 1,298.
It's great to see that many companies are getting involved in improving their workplace health.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's it for the week. We hope you enjoyed this week's stories, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a safe week, everyone.